So verse 28, when my intellect becomes ignorant in all fields of knowledge, this is the weapon of evil karma returning on me for persisting in activities that must be cast aside. From now on, I shall cultivate the insights of learning, and so on. Okay, so when our intellect becomes ignorant in all fields of knowledge, especially Dharma, we're very educated and knowledgeable about the latest movies. Okay, but in other things, you know, we can't hold what we hear in mind, or we find the Dharma teachings hard to understand. We don't get it. It all seems contradictory. Our mind is very dull. We can't concentrate. We're extremely forgetful. Okay? Do you know that mind? Oh, okay. So it is the weapon of evil karma returning on me. What did we do in the past? For persisting in activities that must be cast aside. Okay, so in the past when we've had the opportunity to go for Dharma or go for entertainment, we've chosen entertainment. Okay, when we've had the opportunity to look at our mind or look at Disneyland, we've chosen Disneyland. Okay, so we've gotten involved in distractions, and we've also gotten involved in a lot of negative activities, which have in turn created the karma, which acts as obscurations on our own mind, and so it makes it difficult to understand the Dharma. So we procrastinated, mañana, the mañana mentality. Practice Dharma later, some other time when my little toe doesn't hurt. So always having some excuse or another. And so that has resulted in this lifetime, finding it very difficult to understand the Dharma or to focus on it. Makes sense, doesn't it? And so remembering that right now we're experiencing the results of unfortunate, misguided actions we did in the past, then let's make a strong determination from now on to cultivate the insights of learning and so forth. Okay, so from now on, let's put our energy into, gaining the three wisdoms, the wisdom of learning or studying, or hearing the teachings, the wisdom of reflecting and thinking about them, and the wisdom of meditating on them. Okay, so thinking like this, it encourages us to persist in learning the Dharma and putting it into practice. So even though something be difficult to understand, instead of just throwing up our hands and saying, "Why try?" remembering that's what we did in previous lives and that's why we continue to have difficulties now, then trying to make an effort. Because learning the Dharma is different than learning other things in school. In school, you're supposed to, learn something and then tell the professor what they already know on a test. And in Dharma, that's not what we're supposed to do. Our learning is very much, we're not expected to understand everything at the beginning. Okay, we're expected to make an effort. Okay, but we're not expected to understand everything. And so at the beginning, sometimes we're just grappling with the words and the vocabulary. Then the next time we hear it, we understand something about the vocabulary, so we start to grapple with the concepts and try to understand them. Still pretty confused. Then the third time we hear it, we begin to make some headway understanding the concepts. And so slowly, slowly, if we hang in there, things that we didn't understand before gradually become clearer to us. So a lot of what we're doing is what they call planting seeds. In other words, we're hearing it. We're planting the seed in our mind. And then if we persist and continue to cultivate, the seeds begin to sprout. But if we don't plant the seeds, or having planted them, we just give up our hands because they haven't sprouted the next day, then they're never going to get anywhere. Okay? So I remember, actually, Tom, it was your mom who had a previous retreat, said that her motto was just keep showing up. You know, I think that that's very wise advice, and that's what she did, you know, over a number of years. Because I remember at the beginning, she was kind of going, you know, and she just kept showing up. And now she understands a lot more, and she sees the value of, you know, just keeping on showing up. So you may wonder where she is this retreat. We'll find out, but. Okay, but I think her advice was very good, even though she didn't show up this one. Give her our love, okay? Okay. Then verse 29. When I am overwhelmed by sloth while practicing Dharma. Oh. What verse was I in? This is the weapon of evil karma returning on me. For amassing obscurations to the sublime Dharma, from now on I shall undergo hardships for the sake of the Dharma. Okay? So when we're overwhelmed by sloth, you know, the alarm clock rings, we can't get up. Of course, we can always get up for work, but for meditation, we can't get up. You know, we sit down to practice and we want to lie down. We become advocates of, you know, lying down meditation. We start to study and... You know that one? Okay. Yeah, so falling asleep, slothful, you know, we're completely out of it. Okay, so it's not due to lack of sleep, because sometimes we slept a great deal right before, you know. So it's nothing to do with sleep. It often has nothing to do with whether you've had coffee or not either. And you can watch this happen, this kind of sloth, and you can tell that it's karmic obscuration, because you're completely fine before you step into the teaching hall. And as soon as the topic turns to, you know, a certain topic or something that's a little bit difficult, boy, you're out, you know? And it's like sudden and this completely, like you've been drugged. Anybody ever had that? You know, really, you feel like you've been drugged. And as soon as the session's over and you walk outside, you're okay again. You know, so you can see it's not, you know, lack of sleep or, you know, something else. It's this incredible obscuration that just hits you like a ton of bricks, you know. Usually when you're sitting in the front row in front of the teacher who can see you when you're falling asleep, you know, when you're going... What? What? No, I know what I do. Yeah, right in front of Geshe. Are you taking notes and you start off with the first part of the sentence and then the rest of the sentence is, you know, it's not even handwriting anymore because you've fallen asleep in the middle of the sentence? Anybody have that one? Okay, so... Okay, so you're overcome by sloth when practicing Dharma. It's the wheel of evil karma, weapon of evil karma returning on me. What did we do? Amassing obscuration to the sublime Dharma. Okay, so this includes things like looking down on people who are learned, you know? So people who are good practitioners or good scholars, then we criticize them. We say, oh, it's not important. All that, those people, they're just intellects. Intellectuals, you know, they just know the Dharma by words, but they don't really practice. It's not very important to study like they do. Or, you know, these people who practice, they're just escaping society. They're just leeches off society. They should go get a job, you know, do something useful. You know, so criticizing the Sangha, criticizing, you know, sincere practitioners and learned people, deprecating what they do. It's, and then also not showing respect for Dharma's texts and scriptures. And so, you know, in your refuge guidelines where it talks about, you know, treating the scriptures respectfully, it's not because the paper and ink need respect, but because that those particular accumulations of paper and ink are describing the path to enlightenment. And for that reason, they're very precious, because the path is precious. So when we don't respect materials and Dharma books, it's like not respecting the path. Okay, so that tends to make obscuration on our mind. So that's why we, you know, don't put our Dharma things on the floor. We have a cloth underneath them or a table. Why we don't sit on our Dharma books or step over them. You know, why you don't just kind of leave your Dharma books on the same table with the TV guide and, you know, your newspapers, or put your coffee cup and teacups on top of them, you know. But it becomes a mindfulness practice of you know, taking care of the materials that teach us the path to liberation. Okay? So you know, caring for them. In Asian countries, they have this wonderful practice of printing Dharma books for free distribution. And I thought that that kind of practice would help to purify the karma of disrespecting the Dharma books, because instead what you're doing, you know, people donate money and then you can, you know, you print the books for free distribution, and it's wonderful, you know, then anybody can come and take. In our society, you know, you have to buy everything. And, you know, we do our best to kind of give things away, but, you know. Yeah.
Lama Yeshe does for just gives them away for free. You can give a donation if you want.
Yeah, right. The Lama Yeshe Wisdom Archives are very good with that. Yeah. Yeah. And the thing is, in Asia, people feel so happy to give to do that. And so that's the value. Like, for many years, DFF was sending Dharma books to third world countries. We would, you know, buy various Dharma books and send them to third world countries. You know, sending books to the inmates, making the Dharma available to others. So I think all that kind of practice tends to purify the karma of having disrespected the Dharma books. Okay, so from now on, I shall undergo hardships for the sake of Dharma. Okay? So we're always willing to undergo hardships for the sake of money. Yeah. You know, we'll work overtime, we'll work when we're tired, we'll drive long hours, you know, to our job, we will stay up late studying. You know, we're very willing to undergo hardships for the sake of money. We're not so willing to undergo hardships for the sake of the Dharma. And that's because our priorities are mixed up. Yeah, because money comes and it goes. And definitely at the time of death, it's gone. Okay, can't take it with to the next life. Whereas the Dharma that we learn, the Dharma that we cultivate inside of our own hearts and minds, always stays with us, and the imprints of that go with us into future lives. So that's why we're being encouraged here to undergo hardship for the sake of Dharma, because in the end, it benefits us much more. So if you look in old Tibet, you know, pre-1959 Tibet, what people did to get the Dharma, you know, they had, at least in the Gelu tradition, the three great monasteries that were in and around Lhasa. But many people were born out in Amdo or Kham, you know, very, very far away. And so that it would take them 3 months to walk to Lhasa. Okay, but they would go on pilgrimage to Lhasa, or they would go there to study, leaving their families. You know, you couldn't just buzz home for the weekend to see everybody. You know, and you had usually had to walk because they didn't have vehicles with wheels in pre-59 Tibet. Okay, so you walked. You had to undergo the dangers of bandits and so on. You know, but people did that because they really treasured the Dharma. Or when they went to do retreat, they went up the mountains in a cave. You know, they didn't have a refrigerator and a microwave and a heater and an air conditioner and, you know, a nice comfy bed and everything like that. You know, so that's because of valuing the Dharma. Or when they were studying, very often they would stay up all night debating or reciting the texts. Yeah? And, you know, I think we should admire people who practice like that, rather than calling them extremists just because we can't do it. But, you know, to think of exerting ourselves a little bit. You know, because so often the slightest bit of inconvenience, you know, we just give up. You know, the dates don't match what's convenient for us because we have to go to a wedding and we have another social engagement. So we just don't bother going to the Dharma activity. Yeah, because it's inconvenient for us. Yeah. Or we have to drive across town to the Dharma Center and it's too long. You know, forget walking 3 months to Lhasa. You know, can't sit in the car and drive across town. Or, you know, the teachings last too long and we're tired at work the next day. You know, we want the teachings to, you know, be a little bit earlier and end earlier. You know, so sometimes we're so pampered, so spoiled. And we don't make use of our precious human life. You know? And, you know, when we have to pay something to get to a place, I'm not talking about attending teachings because I'm a strong advocate of the teachings being free and people giving dana. But when we have to pay for transportation, then all of a sudden, you know, we don't have the money for the transportation. We have the money to go on vacation. We have the money to go out to dinner. We have the money to go to the movies. We have the money to buy ourselves a new pair of shoes, even though we have 15 pairs or 20 pairs already. Yeah, we have the money to buy a new watch. We have money for lots of things that we want, but we don't have the money to get the ticket to go to where our Dharma teacher is. And instead, we want our Dharma teacher to come to us. You know, self-serve. They should serve us. We're the self. Okay, so, you know, we want the teachers to come to us, and, you know, and they should all travel, you know, at the hours and dates that are convenient for us to pick them up at the airport, and they should travel economy class, because we don't want to, you know, pay for anything else, and, you know, and so on and so forth, and so somehow we're missing what the Dharma's about. Okay, so I'm not saying that this is true for everybody, but just, you know, giving it as maybe a little bit of a reference for us to think about, you know, what are we willing to give up for the sake of the Dharma? You know, and then when we do give something up, we're very sure that everybody knows about it. It was so hard for me to take a week of work. You can't imagine the sacrifice I went through to take a week off of work, and I'm doing that for you. You know. Again, you know, so that our teachers practice proper student devotion. You know, we remind them of everything we do for them, you know. You know, I worked so hard to arrange this retreat for you to teach. You know, okay, but just to reflect a little bit, yeah. It's interesting at the Abbey because sometimes they get me going over lunch, and I start telling my stories. You know, I walk 20 miles to the school in the snow stories. You know, but you know it. The new people kind of, you know, wake up a little bit. It's like, oh, that was a totally different situation than we have. You know, did you really do that? Yeah. To really do retreat in a farmhouse with no running water and big rats? Yes. You know. So, oops. Thank you. Yeah. So just, you know, cultivating the mind that's willing to undergo a little bit of difficulty for the sake of something that brings great happiness. Yeah? And that's important, you know, to be successful in our Dharma practice. Yeah, just a little bit of an aside, you know, we're planning the Vajrasattva retreat at the Abbey, and we're working flat out to do this, and we desperately need help because there's a lot of work that needs to be done to get to ready the place for the Vajrasattva retreat. Meanwhile, we're getting emails from a few people who have applied, not all the people who have applied, but a few, saying, "Well, we want to come, but we don't have any money," you know, and you know, we don't have any money, as if, well, what am I supposed to do about it? You know, and we're just offering the place. It's up to the students to organize the retreat. We're not a retreat center organizing retreat making money, you know. And so having to explain to people, you know, that a retreat starts before you get there. Yeah. That your retreat starts with, you know, raising the money. The money doesn't come out of nowhere to have food and to have heating and to have, you know, a generator and stuff like that. And if you want those things at the place that you do retreat, then, you know, you pitch in and help. You don't just wait for somebody else to do all the work and raise the money and collapse out of hard work, you know, and then you just kind of trot in on the day of the retreat, plump yourself down and say, "Where's my food?" You know? That's not the way it goes. You know, so people have to make some effort and create the causes to one retreat. And the whole thing is that if you do that, then when you get on retreat, your meditation is much more successful. Why? Because you really value the opportunity to do retreat. If everybody else does everything and you just, you know, stroll in there, then there's no energy from your side. You didn't have to do anything. You don't value it. You take it for granted and sit there and complain, you know, because not hot enough. But if we really have to put ourselves out, you know, and we have to engage in part of the process of raising the funds and building the walls and, you know, figuring out what kind of generator to get and, you know, putting the floor in the meditation hall. You know, if we have to engage in doing that, then when we're there, boy, you know, we really appreciate the place, you know, and the opportunity we have. So that's why, you know, it's so important, you know, to really put ourselves out in those kinds of situations, because it impacts the level of our meditation later on. Okay? So do you see that link between, you know, what it means to create the cause for doing retreat? It's not just plunking down a check. It's putting your energy, you know, into it and readying the circumstances and, you know, giving something up to help that happen. And then it becomes really valuable to you. And when you meditate, you know, you're able to focus. And when you can focus, you gain understanding. Okay? So this is an important kind of thing for us to understand. You know, the same thing goes with people working at DFF. You know, instead of just leaving all the work, you know, leaving a few volunteers to do all the work and then you just show up for class, you know, put in some effort and, you know, take on a volunteer job and do some of the work and, you know, contribute your energy to make the center and its activities really grow and prosper. Because when you put in your energy and you're doing something, then when you go to the center, you know, it's a whole much more, bigger thing to you. Okay? Yeah? But it means something to you, you know, because you put in your energy, you know, on a physical level, in a time level, you know, to making the event happen instead of just letting a few dedicated people work hard and get exhausted. You know, to remember that things like this are group efforts, and y'all contribute, and our contribution benefits our own Dharma understanding. Okay? So instead of just thinking of Dharma practice as, you know, I go to the retreat and let everybody else do the hard work, or I go to the center and the teachings and let everybody else do the hard work, you know, putting our energy in and doing something.